All right, the next paper is titled Assessment of Site-Specific Applications of 1,3-dichloropropene in Commercial Fields in Georgia. I'll be the presenter, and I'll note that, at least in the program, if not here, Chip, you are an author in the program. I'm not sure how your name got left off here, Chip, but Rodney Dangerfield suffers as well. True story, I remember back in, let's see if I can go back one space. I went to 5 years old, standing on the edge of a pool with my best friend, and we looked in the deep end, and I said, it looks deep, and he said, it looks cold, and he jumped, and I couldn't swim, and somebody had to pull me out, all right? But he could swim. But the point I want to make here is, Ms. Xavier, you talked a little bit about site-specific applications earlier today. Tom has talked about them. There's no doubt that site-specific applications of a nematicide like telone, when applied properly and in the proper situation, will save the grower in terms of cost, in terms of labor, but not compromise yield. There's no doubt about that. Now, the deep end of the pool is knowing that that's true, hoping I can swim, but also recognizing the fact that at this point, especially in Georgia and other states, is we remain at that critical point where we haven't jumped yet. There's a resistance on the part of people like myself that we don't know everything about the process. We don't know everything about the... I can start now. We don't know everything about the what could go wrong. Is there's a fear that if we don't have the grower put out telone on the entire field, that it may cost the grower and then it costs us, a grower like yourself, sir. I tell you not to put out telone everywhere. You take my word. It goes wrong and you come after me. Okay, so that's the fear. So what we're doing this talk is we're in Georgia, working much like Tom has. We're trying to jump into the deep end and trying to come up with the information that growers need to make that decision. Now, this is some work that Brenda Ortiz did earlier during her PhD career. She's now at Auburn University, but this is root knot nematode. Where you see larger dots, those are larger populations of root knot nematode. Where you see smaller dots, are smaller populations. And we've had talks today already showing the relationship between soil texture and reniform nematode, but it's much more important for root knot nematode. And what we can see is that depending upon where you are in the field, we see that you have more nematodes in some areas, less in others, and what we see is that the higher nematode populations are related to sandier texture. You get in the more silt, the finer texture, we have lower nematode populations. That's known. That's nothing we need to document for the growers anymore. They believe us. But what we do need to show them is that they can effectively put out telone in a site-specific application way if it's appropriate for their field, and in doing so, they save the money and investment in telone, but they don't compromise the yield. And so the objectives here, this is from an extension standpoint, because the research is there. The research says, yes, we can do this. The jump into the deep end of the pool for an extension specialist like me is to say, Johnny, what growers can do it? What growers can we put that out there and not have that problem? So my objectives are, first off, can we use a prescription basis, the site-specific applications, to increase value and profit? Increase value and profit by decreasing the cost of managing nematodes. And then also, in a site-specific field, how much risk is there? Because site-specific applications are as much an art as they are a science. You can get the Verus data. You can find out what the soil conductivity is, but somebody has to determine what's the difference between a high risk and a low risk based upon our conductivity. In Louisiana, they have tremendous differences in soil conductivity. In Georgia, not so much. You would consider us all sand, okay? So what's the risk of underestimating a nematode population? Saying that none of it needs to be treated, or less of it needs to be treated, where if you treated all of it, you'd make better profits. Or overestimating, saying that we need to treat a larger area than we don't. And so those are the objectives I have here in this trial, or in this paper, is say, what can we do as extension specialists to get growers to adopt, but not only adopt, so that the following year they don't come back and say, you made a mistake, I'm not doing it anymore. Our experimental design here was in the first column, the left-hand column is first, to identify cotton producers like yourself who are using telone or who are willing to use telone. We selected seven fields with growers who were already using telone, who were interested in seeing if this would work for them. Five of those fields were southern root knot nematode, which I'll talk about today. Two of them were reniform nematode. And based upon our talk we had earlier today, it seems that reniform nematode may be very effective in doing this as well. We determined the soil conductivity using the Verus rig, and with the Verus data, we then based upon that indirectly what soil the soil texture would be. We created, or actually Debbie Waters, our consultant, created risk management zones based upon differences in soil conductivity. We fumigated with Telone. And our treatments were, if you go to the other column, is we either had untreated strips through the field, we had strips through the field that were completely treated with Telone, regardless of what the risk was, and we had a third treatment, which was we put the Telone out specifically where we had a high-risk zone. If we considered the soil conductivity to be low enough, or we felt that we had, or high enough, or we felt that we had silty soils less risk, we didn't put the Telone out. We had a randomized complete block design as far as strips of the field, four replications of the three treatments I just described. We had 144 sample points within the field. We had 12 strips. We had 12 sample points randomly placed within the field ahead of time and identified with GPS. And then, so 144 total points, 12 within each strip. An example from Charity Grove. On the left-hand side, you'll see this is the result of what the map looked like when we did the soil conductivity. Heavier soils with higher soil conductivity are in red. Lighter soils with lower soil conductivity are in the pink. If you move to the right side, you'll see the prescription zones that were created. And in the green border, that's our test area. We had strips running through the entire area there, replicated the three treatments, replicated four times. So 12 strips through the field. Okay. Here's a map at harvest. You can see it doesn't show much difference as far as the harvest goes, but this is harvest maps were taken in October. But more importantly, you can see the strips through the field, how they were laid out, randomized in the field. Again, untreated the entire length, 3 gallons of Telone the entire length, or our prescription program where we would treat based upon the risk, turning the Telone on and off, either 3 gallons or no Telone as we go through the field. Data collection was not a joy for my technicians. You can tell by their stoic picture faces here. Only one could manage to smile. I don't know why he smiled, but it was a hard day for them. Each of the 144 points was flagged. They were GPS. We went back to them. We got yield data off large plots, which I won't present, but we also got yield data off the 12 feet of row surrounding these the flag points. Each site was sampled. Each point was sampled twice during the year. Early in the season, we got soil data, we got plant data, we got height data. After harvest, we went back out and we got soil data again, and we took our final root knot ratings, both in terms of root ratings, gall ratings, and in terms of soil. Okay, just an example of what we did. Okay, we have four combinations of prescription. We have blue, which means we had a low-risk zone, and we did not apply Telone. We have red, which was a low-risk zone where we did apply Telone. We have yellow, which is a low-risk zone where we would not have applied Telone to begin with, but we did for the study. And then we have green, which was both high-risk and Telone was applied. And again, looking at Charity Grove Field, we got 12 strips, 144 points. 54 of those points were in the low-risk, no-Telone zones. 30 of them were in the high-risk, no-Telone zones. 21 were low-risk plus Telone. 39 were high-risk plus Telone. Is my talk over? Is it time for questions? Have I called for questions, Terry? What's the screen? Why is the screen wrong? Yeah. Low risk. Okay. Wait. This is important. All right. Red. Yeah. You're good. I forgive you. That doesn't count against my time. You're throwing me off my track. Jorge, don't count this against me. We talk. All right. So it is. Red is high risk. Thanks, Terry. I appreciate that. So. If Terry ever asks you a question, know that's always well-intentioned, no matter how much it stings. So, red is high risk, no Telone. All right? Moving on to the next slide, Terry. What I would show here is from a theoretical results what I want to show. And again, risk one is low risk, no Telone. Red is high risk, no Telone. Low risk, Telone. And then the green is high risk and Telone. And what you'll see is if we're looking at growth in the crop or we're looking at yield, if the site-specific works out well, you would expect better growth where you don't have any nematodes, and you would expect minimal difference between that growth if you have put out Telone or not put out Telone, right? There's no nematodes, the Telone shouldn't help it. So your blue and yellow bars should be about the same. If you're high risk and don't put out Telone, the red bar, you should have less growth, okay? And the green bar with the Telone should give a recovery. So that's for growth and yield. This is for growers to think about. What should decrease? The nematode counts and galling. So if you have no nematodes and the blue or the yellow, regardless of telone, you should see a decrease in galling. If it works, the red, that's where you have high risk and don't put out telone, you should see an increase in galling and nematode counts. And the green, where you put the telone out, should help to decrease it. I show you this because if we're doing our site-specific right, if this is the way it's working, this is what we would expect to see. Let's look at two of our fields, the bar field and the horn field. Okay? And if I have a red asterisk above it, it means it fits the pattern we would expect. In this situation, we got nearly equal yields based upon those 12-foot sections centered around a point when we had low risk, either with or without telone. It's picture perfect. And where we had a high-risk field, we lost yield. When we treated with telone, we increased that. This is the poster child for it worked in that field. The horn field, slight increases, but the slight increases came whenever we put telone out. What that says to me is if we needed telone in that field, we needed it across the entire field. If we look at Charity Grove, we see that yields increase regardless, or even in the high risk, and so something was wrong with our maps. Not with the concept, but the maps were not correct. But if you look at Schieber Point and Sheffield Church again, what we see is decreased risk or decreased yields where we have high risk, and as we put telone out, we're seeing the increase in yield. So it actually did work. You can argue with me statistics, but from a sampling standpoint at this point, we're simply saying, does the pattern fit for the growers to use? Early season nematode counts. And again, in these seasons, in the bar field and the horn field, we did not see nematodes to begin with. But by late season, we did. The problem in this situation is we would have expected what? From these maps, we would have expected to see that the red was taller than anything out there. The red certainly should have been taller than the blue. Now, it's complicated by some of our sampling, but in this case, we can't say definitively from looking at nematode counts that we accurately identified the zones. When we look at these three as well, Charity Grove, Schieber Point, and Sheffield, early in the season, more importantly, later in the season, and these, Charity Grove and Sheffield Church, it seems that we did. At least comparing blue, which was a low-risk zone, to red, which is a high-risk zone, we did at least, when we go back and get the nematode samples, as inaccurate as they may be, we are identifying where some of the higher populations should be. And from this, just from a pattern standpoint, it seems to be that we're making sure or that it is following what we want it to. Number of galls per root system. And again, this is the truest form. This is going in to say, how much damage are we actually seeing? And again, if these site-specific, if these maps are drawn correctly, I don't question the process, but does it work in these grower fields? The blue bar should be lower than the red bar. In this situation, what we do see is that we get significant increase in gall damage, where at the bar field, at the horn field, not so much. Again, the bar field says, yes, we drew the maps correctly, the grower can use it, the horn field says otherwise. The bar field late in the season, again, our galling is the same. Early in the season, late in the season, we're seeing the same thing where we're getting the same benefits from treating specific, we're accurately identifying where the nematode should be. The Schieber Point, again, we're seeing the same thing. We're accurately identifying, it seems, from this data based upon our points, that as we identify a low-risk situation, we're finding less nematode damage, a high-risk situation, more nematode damage. The only thing that's a little bit troubling here is that if we have no nematodes, the yellow bar and the blue bar should be about the same. So we are seeing some benefit. We're still seeing a benefit from telone, even when we call it a low-risk situation. Late season, again, the Schieber Point is seeing the kind of trends we would like to see if the site-specific application is working correctly. Charity Grove and Sheffield, they're not following the trends we would expect, and that is we have less damage where we predict a low-risk situation in blue, more damage in a red situation. Nothing wrong with the science behind it. It's the application for our growers. Okay? When we look at shoot height, and again, shoot high should be based upon the same thing as yield is. If you have less nematodes or better nematode control, you should have a higher blue bar, a lower red bar, both at the bar field and the horn field. The pattern is the same. Not much difference between when we treat with telone or not, but we're seeing that same pattern where less growth and some recovery where we use telone when we have a high-risk situation. So in this situation, it appears that we are accurately predicting. And Schieber Point is a great example. This is almost picture perfect, where better growth and similar growth in a low-risk situation with and without telone in blue and yellow, the red bar, the higher-risk zone, we're seeing a decrease in growth and some recovery we put out telone in green. The Charity Grove and Sheffield Church, we don't see that. Okay? So what are our conclusions? we can say from this, five fields, the main goal was to look and see how effective was our site-specific applications. And that's based upon our sampling, it's based upon our interpretation of the data, it's based upon the ability to take the raw data, the various data, and decide, almost as an artist would, where those zones are. It's, no, the data is not wrong, the various is not wrong, it's how we interpret that. So what I can say in this, for Georgia growers, two out of those five trials, based upon yield, based upon growth, based upon root galling, the Barfield and the Shiver Point fields, both, we save money, we would save the money for the grower by using site-specific applications. Less effective would be the Horn field and the Sheffield. Both of those could have probably benefited from the entire field being treated. I think that the differentiation we have in zones is probably less biologically significant and more artificially upon what we created a map from. And I think that both of those probably needed entire field. The last one, not effective, the Charity Grove, we probably need to go back and look and see how we created those maps, because in that situation, it was less effective, and we certainly need to telone across the entire field. So what's this mean for our growers? It means for the growers that we absolutely can use, even with our Charlie, with our reduction in differences in soil texture versus what you have, we can absolutely recommend this for growers. We can show them the importance of saving money and managing nematodes, but first and foremost has to be not site-specific applications, it has to be managing the nematodes themselves. What we're going to do from now on is we're going to take these same fields, go back and revisit how the data was drawn, how the risk maps were drawn, and see if we can refine how we draw those risk maps and become better at doing that. And I'm done, okay? You can acknowledge and see the collaborators I have, and I appreciate all of their help. With that, I will stop. We've got 15 minutes between our next talk, or as soon here fairly quickly, we can move to the next talk. Any questions for me? Terry, it should have been, I know it. Low telone, no telone, high telone. All right, go ahead.
Do you have any idea what your thresholds are on the various data that you use in this study?
Good question. Debbie Waters, the consultant, she's the one who put those together. I allowed her to do that independently. I'm not sure. I think she went for just breaks that were natural breaks in the field.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. I think that my opinion, and Chip, you can correct.
Thresholds aren't.
Don't think that, yes, we do not. The question is, did we use thresholds to determine what was high risk and low risk? I don't believe so. I believe more it was looking for natural breaks between high and low. And the danger there is that we see breaks in the conductivity data that the nematodes don't recognize.
Was there, I would encourage you to look at why you should find in the confounding variables is the size of your sand fraction. Because you're just saying that, okay, it has sand, but what size? Very fine sand can be 32 times smaller than a coarse sand, but it's very close to the size of a silt fraction.
That's true.
That was something that confounded me with some of my soils that I was looking at. And if you actually see what size the sand fraction is, it can be a very fine sand and be much smaller than what you assume.
And that's absolutely correct. And hopefully, and again, this is the trend, this is the jump into the deep end of the pool, and hopefully I can swim. Right? Our growers are not, and I don't know about you, sir, but our growers are not going to take soil samples and get them particle sized. So we have to be able to absolutely rely upon soil conductivity and corresponding nematode counts before growers will ever consider adopting. But you're right, from a research standpoint, that's true.